You're listening to Radio Influence.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
All right, and welcome to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Crushell. The con man is here, and we are, of course, Crush Performance. If you want to get in touch with us, please do so. It's crushperformance.com. You can sign up for our weekly newsletter, become a member, and get all the high-performance information that could take you to the next level. All the social media hookups are there as well. Today, a very, very special show on Crush Performance as we look into the world of injuries and injury prevention from a psychological perspective. Listen, is it possible that anxiety, stress, coping strategies, and mindset impact your risk of injury, maybe even perhaps the severity of your injury, even your recovery time? Well, you bet. This research says yes, without a doubt. And there are concepts like daily hassle levels, uplift scales, stress susceptibility, and trait irritability. What does this all mean, and how does this apply to you? Well, I'm telling you what, we're joined today in studio by two exceptional guests, Dr. Urban Johnson, Associate Professor for the Center of Research on Welfare, Health, and Sport from Halmstad University in Sweden joins us. Dr. Johnson, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
All right. And, of course, Crush favorite, Dr. Martin Mrazek, clinical neuropsychologist and currently a professor at the University of Alberta. Thanks for coming in.
Good to be here.
Excellent. So, gentlemen, thank you for coming in today. I'm really actually pretty excited about this conversation because as we look at the world of sports performance, there's one thing that we focus on when this all kicks off. We look at helping athletes achieve and strive to, you know, reach their goals. And the number one priority in all of our programming is injury and injury prevention. And we go through all of these crazy models. We do functional movement screens and posture analysis. We look at strength deficits and muscular symmetries. We look at, you know, biochemistry in terms of daily nutrition and sleep habits. But, you know, one thing we've never really looked at is the psychological side. So I'm excited about this today. And Dr. Johnson, maybe you could tell us a little bit for our listenership to kick this off, how you got started on this path when it came to your research.
Well, there were several reasons for doing this. I work as a coach in European handball, and I have seen quite a lot of injuries in my players, both on female and male teams. And of course, I start to wondering: is it possible to prevent injury to occur? Because it's obviously quite a big blow for the club if the players are injured. And from that, I started actually to do basic research, but also applied research, working with intervention and see if it eventually could help the player being less injured.
And I think this is one of the big things. And, you know, if we can somehow curb the injury rates, even just in our recreational athletes, leave alone our professional athletes, this is a big trend because we're doing everything we can to do that. So we have a text question for the day, everybody who's listening. And that question is, what was your worst injury and what coping strategy helped you out? Was your mindset or attitude a factor in the injury or in your recovery? Let us know. Text us. It's 101260. Standard rates apply. So let us know, what was your worst injury? What was your coping strategy? And do you think your mindset or your current psychological state might have been a factor in your injury? We'd love to hear about that as we talk about this today. And of course, we'll be picking somebody from our text pool to get two very valuable lift tickets to Marmot Basin as they head into the spring season. Three weekends left up there. Some of the best snow conditions in all of North America right now. And of course, we'll also throw in a $25 hospitality gift certificate from Jasper Inn & Suites. So you can shack up there at the Jasper Inn & Suites and get a good meal on us, that's for sure. So first of all, I guess, Dr. Mrazek, you worked very hard to start this collaboration with Dr. Johnson from Sweden. And maybe tell us how this came about from your side of the story.
So we met last year at the IOC Sports Medicine Conference in Monaco. And what was fascinating about that is you have some of the biggest researchers in the whole world that are connected to the Olympic Games that are presenting about current cutting-edge trends in not only rehabilitation but also in injury prevention. And, I think a growing trend was this whole interest in psychological variables. And can we actually do things in our head that actually significantly reduces physical injury? And that's where I had a great chance to meet with Dr. Johnson and some of his graduate students who are doing some of the cutting edge research in this. And it was very impressive just in that context. If you think of some of the biggest names of, you know, when we think of some of the most elite athletes in the world and some of the potentially devastating injuries that they have and how we can really improve their lives and then filter that knowledge down to the everyday athlete. And so our communication really centered on that. And because, you know, as a psychologist, I'm quite interested in those variables as well. My area is sport concussion, but we're learning to apply some of those same strategies. So really those conversations really led to these conversations. And that's why I'm very glad to have him here in Edmonton this week.
Well, and the timing couldn't be better. You know, we have the NHL playoffs kicking off. Major League Baseball season is starting. We had the NBA in full swing getting set. And we've just finished off the NCAA Final Four, the Masters. Is going. So sports is in full bore, going full tilt. And this is what we're talking about. And of course, we have two Canadians sitting against the Swede here. If we start talking hockey, this could get ugly really quick. We've been battling you guys for the last couple of years, especially at the junior level. A lot of people now understand that hockey in Sweden is maybe the same as in terms of passion levels as it is here in Canada.
Well, I agree fully. And the junior world championship is always a big thing on television in Sweden, even though it's on night or early morning like the one in Canada, because it's an 8-hour difference or whatever it is. But ice hockey is definitely, I would say, the second biggest sport in Scandinavia or Sweden. Soccer is definitely the number one. And several reasons for that. We have so many great players in the international league in Europe, for instance. So it brings a lot of attention to the sports crowd in Sweden. So
Sweden is a fascinating experiment. If you just look at what you guys have done, I think a population around 9 million, is
yeah,
that?
Yeah, that's right.
And the results you guys get on the world stage in terms of professional sports, but also international Olympic-type sports, is fascinating. And that has to do a lot with the research and the support athletes get over in Sweden.
Well, I think you're right, I think we have a lifestyle in Sweden that is very outdoor-oriented, and that brings, of course, a lot of positive things for sports like cross-country skiing and bicycling and swimming and so on. But also it's interesting that on team sports level, we produce quite good results. We may be not so famous for our individual players, but I think the collective thing is the thing that Swedish teams are quite famous in ice hockey and soccer and handball and so on.
Yeah, no question about it. Well, this is an interesting conversation today. Again, we're looking at the psychological factors that influence injury and injury rate in sport. And again, you know, fighting this injury bug has got to be the number one priority, I think, in all professional sports. And also, if you think about the general public, who wants to go out and enjoy their recreational sport, whether it be softball or broomball or curling or hockey or bowling, and wind up being injured? And this is a real fascinating conversation when we talk about the potential for, you know, our psychological or mindset, will we call it mindset? I'm not even sure. But our psychological state influencing the risk of injury, maybe the severity of injury, and in recovery time. I'm just really fascinated by this topic.
Well, yeah, it's definitely a very fascinating topic. And that is the reason why I'm in Edmonton, of course, invited by Dr. Martin. We have done a lot of research, but also practical work with the intervention studies. And I think we will come into this later. But we know that working with in a systematic way, the sports medicine together with sports psychologists, you can actually receive quite amazing results.
I think so. And sports psychology, of course, is now gaining traction in terms of popularity, also functionality. We're now seeing in Major League Baseball, for example, there's some great examples where teams are now investing in sports psychologists for not just their major league teams, but for every single minor league team that they have. That is new. This is the first year that's ever happened. So we're seeing it happen now with full-time sports psychologists in hockey, certainly in soccer, especially in Europe. We know it's a big thing. So is it a stretch to now connect these two dots between mindset and psychology and injury prevention? When you think about it, it doesn't seem like it's too far of a stretch.
Well, I think the interesting thing there is I think you're right, is I think we used to separate those things quite a bit. Sports psychology was for the athlete that really needed it, for the head case, for the guy that was derailing in his career. Well, now that's shifting when we look at the link between just staying out there and being, because the athletes get better when you keep playing. And you're not going to get better if you're continually fighting the injury bug. And especially if you suffer these injuries at an earlier age. Some of the statistics from the studies that Carolyn Emery has done is that if you are out for more than, if you have two injuries during the competitive season in hockey, and you're out for more than 2 weeks each, your chance of playing hockey the next year drops by about 20%. So, again, it just shows us that injuries kind of derail that long-term trajectory. And whether you want to make it to the top levels or whether you just want to keep playing and enjoying yourself, you know, keeping yourself healthy and as stress-free as possible. And that's where Dr. Johnson's research has been really, really cutting edge and very interesting, as he'll talk about what specifically they're doing.
Well, we're talking with Dr. Urban Johnson, Associate Professor for the Center for Research and Welfare in Health and Sport at Halmstad University in Sweden, and Dr. Martin Mrazek from University of Alberta, crush favorite, who's been on the show a number of times, talking about the psychological factors of injury and injury prevention. That's a big number. We know in our young athletes that avoiding injuries is one of our number one priorities, not just because we want to keep them playing, but if we look at the developmental model and developmental curves, one of these injuries can be catastrophic, not just in the short period of time, but also in the long-term development. And that's something I think we have to address. But one of the things I don't think that's really thought of, when an injury happens, the fingers start pointing, right? And they usually go back to the strength coach or the hitting coach or maybe the athlete themselves for not preparing properly. So I think this whole idea of mindset and, you know, we talk about psychological factors impacting performance is fairly new. How prevalent is this sort of, approach over in Europe right now when it comes to, you know, addressing and avoiding injuries? How prevalent is this being? Is it being used by professional teams over there or organizations over there? It seems very new to me.
Well, I would say it's rather new, but not. I would say like this, that the big teams and the big leagues now have sports psychologists, not just working with peak performance orientation, but also working with injury prevention. Not all leagues, of course, but you can see them more and more. And the reason for this is, of course, the research that have reached the bigger audience, that you can actually work with psychological intervention and come up with really interesting results. Especially when you work with at-risk athletes who maybe are prone to be injured. If you have the right prevention intervention, you could probably lessen the injury rate with, I would say, 50, 60, 70% for these groups, especially for the at-risk population.
So if we were to classify or try to explain what an at-risk athlete mm-hmm. might be, how would we explain that to our audience? Well, could I be at risk? I guess, am I at risk? I want to know. Hey, those are big numbers, 50, 60%.
Yeah. Well,
wow.
Yeah. Well, you can do that in several ways. But what we have done is to look at the way the anxiety level of the athletes, if they are very high anxiety, but also if they have faced a lot of stress in their life the last 6 or 12 months. And we also look at the way they behave when they cope with different difficulties in life, like a tough coach and so on. And if you take these three together and you have high anxiety rate, face a lot of stressors, and immature coping skill facing stressors, you probably would be an at-risk person.
Sports psychology has typically focused on, performance strategies in terms of how to think and approaches to performance. This is a real big shift, I think, in the power of psychology. This is next level stuff, in my personal opinion. You know, I've had a chance to read through some of the research and look at what you guys are looking at. And I guess let's cut out for a quick break right now because we're right at the marker. When we come back, let's look at those factors. What exactly are we looking at in terms of the risk factors and the psychological factors that are affecting the risk and the recovery rates for injury? We talk about numbers from Carolyn Emery of 20% for an athlete who's had a couple of injuries per year. 20% decrease or higher risk of not playing the following year. And from Dr. Johnson, addressing these risks or these factors can reduce the risk of injury 50 to 60%. Those are big numbers. And we'll get into that right after the break on Crush Performance. Stay tuned.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, and welcome back to Crush Performance. Jeff Kershaw here, and we are joined in studio by two Crush favorites now. We got a brand new Crush favorite, Dr. Urban Johnson, associate professor for the Center for Research on Welfare, Health, and Sport at Halmstad University from Sweden, joining us for all the way from Sweden. He's in for a week to collaborate and share information with Crush favorite, Dr. Martin Mraz, a clinical neuropsychologist from the University of Alberta. Gentlemen, once again, thanks for joining us in studio.
Good to be here.
Coming off a very interesting first segment as we start talking about the correlation between psychological factors and the rate of injuries. So for everybody who's just tuning in, we had some interesting numbers thrown out in the first segment. Dr. Mrazek mentioned a hockey study where they showed that if a player has injury two times in a year, lasting a week to 2 weeks, the decrease or the percentage that you will play next year drops 20%.
That's correct.
That's a big number. And then also we talk about, you know, looking at anxiety levels and all these psychological factors that might be associated with the increased risk of injury. If they're addressed properly, we can reduce the risk 50 to 60%. And that's a big number for everybody in sport, for the developmental levels for sure. High school, college, even just kids' development. Also right up to, can you imagine what's going on in professional sports if we look at the money invested there in football, hockey, and baseball? And for people who don't know, in baseball, from 2009 to 2014, over those 4 years, $1 billion was spent on pitchers who could not play the game. $1 billion. And it's one of the big issues facing baseball right now as their season kicks off. Last year in 2014, they saw more injuries in that year than the entire decade of 1990. And I wonder, Dr. Johnson, how many of those injuries we could trace back maybe to some of the psychological factors you're talking about. I'm really fascinated about this because, listen, we test and screen these guys. We do 3D biomechanical analysis. They are broken down in every way, shape, or form, but I don't think we've ever really tried to link the psychological mindset or psychological state to the risk of injury.
I think you can link back quite a lot to the psychological issues, and not at least issues that are in relation to history of stressors for these players, and also what we call daily hassle. Because we know from our research and also from practice that if a person exposed with a lot of stress in their life the last maybe 6 or 12 months, the risk of being sick or injured is really high. So I think here we have one issue that we should explore definitely more in detail.
So I think if we do look at this for a second, in order to understand this, let's take an athlete from the moment they were injured. What you guys would do is go back and look at the year prior to that injury and try to find out what kind of factors might have led up to and maybe played a factor in that injury happening.
Actually, we have done that in different populations, for instance, in soccer and other sports, floorball. And what when we interview persons who have been injured, severely injured, and then take them back to the injury day and ask them, did something happen in your life just before this injury occurred? Quite a lot of these athletes say that, well, now when you ask me the question, actually things happened in my life that I had not thought about before. And when we ask them, what happened? Well, it's quite a lot relates to stress in life, but also stress in relation to other people outside of the sport arena. And some few also talk about the high strains and fatigue, that they were very tired from a psychophysiological perspective. So these two combinations really make people, I think, unfocused.
It sounds to me like you could be talking about Tiger Woods right here. a classic example, I think, of a guy who was totally distracted in his world of sport. A guy that was, you know, got caught doing stuff that, well, he probably didn't want to get caught doing. And what did we see from him? Well, we saw a massive decrease in his overall performance, but also we saw the onset of some major injuries. So this might be an example.
I think it's now when you say it, it's quite a good example of this. And of course, you can see you can find other examples in team sports where they had the same background and it eventually end up in a quite bad situation. And of course, being severely injured for Tiger Woods or some other persons is a really big blast. And I think we coming back to our discussion before, I think we can do quite a lot to help these athletes.
Yeah, interesting stuff. We're joined by Dr. Urban Johnson from Sweden and Dr. Martin Mrazek from the University of Alberta, talking about the psychological factors related to injury in sport and well, let's face it, beyond sport. This could be applied to people in the workforce, and I think that's something really important to talk about as well. But I kind of like this idea of, you know, looking at the point of injury and going backwards to find out what has happened. I think that's really fascinating. You talk about the hassle scale. So you take these athletes through a bunch of questionnaires. So we have something that you, in one of your studies from 2010, a football worry scale, a Swedish university scale of personality, life events survey for collegiate athletes. And one that really is interesting to me, the daily hassle scale and brief cope. I don't know what any of this is. I'm fascinated. So maybe let's go through this. What would the football worry scale tell you guys?
Well, it's a scale that is focused on soccer or football in America, and it's basically a scale that detects worry situation and where a player could feel anxiety for a certain situation facing opponents or a coach or a team player. And summing this up, you can get a grasp on how much worry is in the life of this player.
And that would affect, like, you know, stress hormones and maybe sleep patterns, even eating patterns, which could all be factors that would lead up to an injury.
Absolutely, I fully agree. And what we actually try now in to do in our coming research is to have these biomarkers, for instance, looking at the blood and saliva and so on, and cortisol, and try to correlate it with our behavioral studies, for instance, from this instrument that we talked about. Because here you think we think that the if we can have this more holistic perspective on what's going on in the athlete's life, we probably get even more close to tailor good intervention strategies for the athletes.
Wow, see, athletes are getting stressed out. There's lots of reasons for that on the field in relation to sport. Dr. Mrazek, you've dealt with performance anxiety and situations like that, and that's a real thing.
Well, for some, I think for some athletes, it's probably the thing that derails them the most.
And it's manageable, though, if you have coping strategies.
Well, I think that's the thing is sometimes I think some athletes just really have that capacity to regulate their emotions. But when we break down the thought patterns, we tend to see that there's a lot of catastrophic thinking. Anxiety does that to you. You tend to think in worst case scenarios. Hmm. But if you just don't, if it doesn't just stop there, but you continue to think in worst case scenarios, or you continue to worry about the same thing and not do anything constructive about it, I think then after a while, then that's where we see muscle tension and all these other physical variables really start to add up. And I think that you can get away with it for a little while. I think a lot of people can speak to situations where they were anxious, but they really responded to that. But the you know, what Dr. Johnson's research has really shown is that it's just, that's not a good model for how you cope in the long term, especially for young athletes, to really develop those resiliency skills so they develop a good way of coping, because some of the skills that he's using is just that immature versus mature coping. And maybe you want to describe that a little bit.
Yeah, we have one strategy where we actually talk to the athletes. We can do it before the injury have occurred in the preventive intervention, but also, of course, working the rehabilitation where we stimulate the athletes to think, what is a good way of behave when you're faced with like a major injury, and what is not a good way to behave. And often we talk about things like acceptance of the situation versus reaction, take a step away back, but also the importance of taking your own responsibility and do things and not rely on the physiotherapist or other people around you. And having these things stimulated in the athlete thinking also helped them to find the more mature way to behave and to cope with a potential injury situation.
Fascinating stuff. We're talking with Dr. Urban Johnson, associate professor at Halmstad University in Sweden, and Dr. Martin Mrazek, of course, from locally here of University of Alberta, talking about the psychological factors in relationship to injury and injury prevention. Dr. Johnson, let's talk about this daily hassle scale. I like this whole thing. I think this can apply to every single human being that wakes up in the morning, regardless of their age. The hassle scale, what is it? What would we see when we go through a hassle scale?
Well, the daily hassle scale is about small micro stresses that you could meet during a day. For instance, staying in the queue in the car, or maybe your computer break down, or you spill some nice Horton coffee or whatever you call it, that kind of stuff. And that could be definitely a micro stressor. And if you're faced with lots of these repeatedly over time, this will eventually test your coping strategies. And some people could behave in a good way, but I think we have seen that these accumulated small stresses ends up to a major stressor and puts you in a disadvantaged situation.
So let's talk about this, the daily stresses that we see. You know, getting up, going to the job, getting caught in traffic, or maybe you're late for work, your alarm clock didn't go off. You know, Dr. Mrazek, you and I talked, I think, a couple years ago about superstitions and, you know, tying your right shoelace before your left shoelace and making sure your blue underwear are there. What happens if the blue underwear aren't there? What happens if your shoelace breaks? So staying away from superstitions, all these things. So coping strategies, this sounds like something that we could start at a really young age.
Absolutely, I think so. Even though it's in one way a complex cognitive strategy, it's also rather simple in the sense that it's about taking your own responsibility and hopefully see the opportunities and see the right way to go through. But my feeling is that when younger athletes are injured, who have not so mature coping still because they have not faced so much stresses in their life. For some young athletes, they certainly need a very helpful hand. It could be a parent who is a good role model. It could be a coach. But I would say sometimes also a psychologist who guide them through the situation and learn how to behave in a rational way because they don't have the experience before.
You know, we're very reactive. You just make me think of this. We're very reactive. An injury happens and, whoa, it was me. We get into it and we immediately start looking at strategies to cope with that injury. But very rarely do we reflect on, you know, why that injury happened. I mean, we do. Don't get me wrong. We're trying to go, why did that happen? And I don't think very often we look at all of these, you know, psychological factors that could come into play. It's very interesting. We just had an injury over in Sweden. We actually were doing some physiological testing, and we had young, talented baseball players from Europe running the 60. And one of the Dutch really prospects, high prospect Dutch players, 15 years old, blew his hamstring big time, about 20 yards into his 60, which is a travesty, especially at that time. And he's laying on the turf and he's crying, of course, you know, because it's a big opportunity. There's scouts there, college, pro contract potentially. It's not the end of the world per se, because, you know, we can rehab and fight him through it. But his outlook right there was doom and gloom right off the bat. And I sat down with him and I said, look, here's the deal. Okay, you've had your 90 seconds to feel sorry for yourself. This has happened. For whatever reason, this has happened. Now, let's look at what we can do in this injury time for when you do rehab and come back. Did you come back a better athlete? How important do you think that plan of attack would be?
I would say it's quite important to plan very carefully here, and that is one of the topics applied sports psychologists have in the sports medicine team to prepare athletes for the rehabilitation to come. For instance, in this case with this Dutch guy, because I know from experience working with the injured athletes in several years that one of the things many athletes lacking is information of what is the prospect of this injury and how should I behave? Because if you don't know really how to behave and you're faced with the first hamstring injury, obviously 15 years ago, you need a lot of information here. And information help you to behave in an irrational way and also maybe help you to cope through the biggest obstacle, which normally comes in the first weeks.
Yeah, right. Dr. Morazic, let me ask you this. For example, we have an athlete who goes into an injury with a real negative mindset. What do you think generally that impact would have or the impact would be on his just recovery rates?
I think the issue there in some of the examples that Dr. Johnson has given is that just those negative thoughts, if they're not addressed, anybody who just continues to ruminate in a negative way, their chance of really even finding a good opportunity or seeing the positive or recognizing when good things are starting to happen diminishes. And I think that's part of the concern right there is that you're really missing the glass that's half full and you're really focusing on the glass that's half empty. And I think an important thing is that these mental things, they're learned behavior. These are not things that come automatic. And I think for some people, they do it more readily than others. But I think for a lot of young athletes, these are things that we have to teach them. There are things that they have to practice. It's like any physical skill to get better at it. Well, you have to work on these things. Mm-hmm. So same with, you know, some of the experiential learning and some of the relaxation strategies and the coping mechanisms. Those are things that it's just not like a pill that you take and then suddenly you feel better. It really is learned behavior. And so I think that's where the psychology of it is really starting to help us with our understanding is that it's not just, hey, a one-shot deal, we'll get better and that's that. It really is incorporating this into a lifelong, like you said, a holistic approach. But just how important that is to really teach yourself great coping skills that, you know, over time, we're all going to face challenges. But when we have that history to say, I've learned how to deal with the stress in these situations, I've learned how to deal with these, you know, very self-defeating thoughts, that can be a very powerful tool. And I think some of the examples that Dr. Johnson has shared, for example, that high jumper that tore her Achilles, a potentially devastating injury. And this was a part of her repertoire. And she was able to come back, not just make it, but at a very high level. You can probably give the details. But it was just a fascinating account to say that she really practiced this stuff.
Okay, well, let's get into that after the break. You know, I think about this young baseball player who pulled his hamstring. So here's some kids that flew from Holland into Spain in a very short order. They're sleeping multiple guys to a room. The diet has changed. The eating patterns have changed. You know, they're playing in front of, you know, 30 professional scouts. Stress around the bend. I wonder if this could have been preventable. Let's get into it after the break. We'll talk about the coping strategies and what you can do to make sure you decrease your risk of injury right after this on Crush Performance. Stay tuned.
Radio Influence brings you the best in digital media broadcasting. When it comes to sports, we've got experts like national sports radio host Rich Herrera, the fabulous sports babe, and former Major League Baseball manager Kevin Kennedy. Want a good laugh? Then go on the beach with Pants and Roller Girl, or just LOL with Nancy Alexander. And when it comes to real life, Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger and Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill will make you think. When it comes to what you want, Radio Influence has you covered. Find our programming on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at CrushPerformance.com.
Hey, do that. Please do. Questions, comments, smart remarks, get to us, crushperformance.com. You can also text us live right here, 101260. Let us know what your worst injury is, what your coping strategy was, and do you think your mindset or attitude was a factor, not just in your injury or risk of injury, but in your recovery time as well. We're talking with Dr. Urban Johnson, associate professor in the Center for Research on Welfare, Health, and Sport at Halmstad University in Sweden, and of course, Crush favorite Dr. Martin Morazic, clinical neuropsychologist from the University of Alberta. And it's been a fascinating discussion today as we look at the correlation between psychological factors and sports injuries. And Dr. Johnson, one thing we talked about off the air that I want to get to is the concept of relative age. It's something that we've talked about here before, but we've correlated that more to an advantage than an actual, you know, potential, you know, psychological state that might cause injuries. So I'm interested to get your perspective on this.
Well, first of all, when we talk about relative age, if effect, we talk about those who are born the first 3 months of the year. And,
yeah.
and when we follow this during their junior years, it could be an advantage. But when you look at the senior outcome, it's usually not an advantage to be born the first quartile. But it could actually, in some studies, also show as a disadvantage. And the injury point here is that if you are quite physically grown in age of 15, 16, you have obviously quite advantage. But eventually, when your opponents who are born later become bigger and physically stronger, you tend to see more problems coming. And here you start to think, well, I might be not so good as I thought I was when I was 13, 14. And when you start thinking, your concentrations and disruption are quite close to there. And then you could eventually end up in a more vulnerable situation of getting injured. So I think actually we can see a correlation. And if you run through the research done on this area, I'm pretty sure that you also can see a bigger injury rate for this group than the other.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, we've done a lot of work looking at the top athletes of our time. And I'm talking about world record holders, all-stars, you know, perennial gold medalists and or perennial MVPs. And, you know, it's been interesting to note that most of these athletes, male and female, were late developers in the bigger scheme of things. And so I wonder how much that has played a role, you know, when the game catches up to them and then, you know, they're just not prepared for that level of failure that they've never experienced before in their entire lives.
No, exactly. That was my point also. And I think here you have... When you start to feel that your teammates are catching up on you, you start to think. And start thinking is sometimes not very good in a competitive situation where you have full body contact. And here you probably have one of the reasons why we can see an elevated amount of injury in this group, while the other ones who come from behind have high motivation and maybe see the possibilities rather than the bad things, and they might guide through the situation in a more adaptive way.
So we've been talking today about the correlation between psychological stress, anxiety, the hassle scale, the amount of hassles you have over the course of the day, interesting concept, and the increased risk of injury. I've got to think, you know, as I think this through and put this all together into the big picture, there's also a pretty big impact on level of performance as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure about that, and all these things goes together. And as we talked about before the commercial, that if you have a systematic and well integrated approach, which doesn't necessarily have to be very advanced, but if you pay attention to these persons, I think you can reach quite interesting results, not just for the at-risk population that we talked about before, but I am also talking about the athletes that doesn't necessarily have an at-risk of being injured, but they're like a normal athlete. And most of the studies we have done is actually not on at-risk, but it's on competitive athletes. And we repeatedly find the same result, that these actually make a big effect in the end.
Well, and you've talked about some incredible numbers here. You know, an increased or decreased risk of 50% to 60%, and that is a big number in the wide world of sports. There's no question about that. So, what kind of coping strategies are we talking about? Let's start with the young kids. You've talked a bit here about the type of kindergarten you guys have in Sweden, and that could be a factor. I mean, that really is a smart thing, you know, kindergarten outside.
Absolutely. I mean, you can incorporate a lot of things here, but I think a mature adulthood where parents support you in a good way, with not pushing, but being around, and you have solid coaches, maybe not necessarily the best educated, but have a big heart and actually want to put energy into yourself. I think here you find a quite interesting developmental potential. And we can see this from quite a lot of studies, not just in Sweden, but all over Europe, that those kids who come from big city with the best coaches and maybe most motivated parents doesn't necessarily are the one who end up highest. I would say sometimes it's the opposite. The youngsters who come from the small areas with the big hearts coaches.
I think sometimes, maybe you're right, the parents with the, you know, greatest of intentions, you know, and massive support for their athletes. Could that be a potential area of stress for a young athlete?
Well, and, you know, it's that thing that we talk about, balance, but I really think how is that lived out in day-to-day activities? You know, some interesting studies that we've looked at from a concussion perspective is that in one particular study in Sweden, they looked at all the variables that go into recovery from concussions. And so they took these young, these weren't athletes, these were just members of the lay public, and they looked at those who were still symptomatic at 3 months. So after they've had a concussion, just who were having the most problems. And the things that correlated, that accounted for the most variance, was parental distress at the time of injury. Mm. And so here we see, you know, just a system around the kid that is very distressed, and they're not coping well. And so, you know, kids are just that microcosm of you know, what's going on around them. And, you know, it's very humbling as a parent. We've all had those moments where we kind of realize that we're bringing in an agenda that really may not be the most holistic and helpful. And, you know, in the name of competitive sports, of course we want our kids to do well. Nobody's more vested in their kids' success.
Right.
But at what point, you know, really is the distress that we see when they don't do well or when they get injured, how much is that affecting, you know, the overall environment? Is it silent in the car on the way home? You know, those type of things. And just making sure that, you know, I mean, these things are all connected. Like, we don't, it's not just these separate little events that happen and suddenly you're successful or suddenly you're not successful. It really is all these things that factor into it. And, you know, just the new age of parenting, how can we promote the healthiest, happiest parents? And that, how does that translate into being happy, healthy kids? Think of the experiences that we've all had with your dad. Were they good? Were they not so good?
Mm-hmm.
How did that help you move on to the next level? And you always hear parents or athletes thank their parents, but what was it about those characteristics about parents that we can learn from? That while they really implemented that support, they pushing their kids, but at the same point, not really adding to the hassles and the stress in their life.
And that can go right into the coaching world as well. As you create an environment in which you want your athletes to succeed, much like the parents. Parents, I guess, in a way, is just a form of coaching, you know, if you really look at it. So when you get kids into a sports model, the coach becomes a really, really important person. We know that for a fact. How that coach acts in the environment they create is all important.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've been a parent to my two youngster and kids, and I also been the coach for them for several years. But I have seen both good and bad parents here, and definitely when talk about role models, the best parents, in my opinion, is the one who full heartedly support the youngster, but not put any pressure whatsoever, because the pressure is there anyway from coaches and from the inside world. So I think a very important role model is the parent, but they should not push more external pressure than the children already have.
It all boils down at the end of the day to some pretty solid common sense, doesn't it?
Right on.
And there's some more advanced things, of course, that go along with that once you get into it. We have less than a minute left. I want to thank you guys for coming in today. Dr. Urban Johnson from Halmstad University in Sweden, Dr. Martin Mrazek from the University of Alberta. A fascinating conversation when we look at one of the biggest issues, I think, in the sporting world today, injury and injury prevention, especially when we look at the financial state of professional sports now and the need for young developmental models that really do work. So again, once again, thank you guys for today. Stay tuned, you guys. The podcast will come up, and I will be throwing up some links to some of Dr. Johnson's research as well. So that'll be going up in Crush Performance here very soon. Next week, we're going to be talking more sport performance and performance in general. So stay tuned. We'll talk to you then.